It's October the 2nd, 2009. I'm Mike Benedetti. This is 508, a show about Worcester. Today, with Brendan Malikan.
Good morning.
And we don't have a lot of topics this week, but we're going to go into those topics that we do have in depth. It's a beautiful early October day today. It's finally getting a little bit cold, and you know, we do this show here out in the woods, and I think that we are willing to do this show in all weather as it gets colder and colder. One thing I would like to try to elicit from our audience, we have a few hundred people in our audience, you could say. We'd like to see some comments. I would love to see 10 comments this week. That's the bar I'm going to set.
I think that's a fair number.
So this could be, if you want to put up a Facebook comment, Twitter message, you want to call us on the cell phone, the numbers on the website, email pieandcoffee@gmail.com, come up and talk to us personally. I feel like we probably actually do get 10 people personally every week say something to us. You know, blog post, email, whatever. You know, then we will continue. As long as, you know, we'll continue. If you want to put yourself out there, we're sure as hell willing to put ourselves out there. What's going on in Worcester this week?
Well, I think one of the big things happening that at least fits into our realm is Scott Zobeck leaving Worcester Magazine.
That
was kind of abrupt news from Worcester Magazine. He is moving off to greener pastures, so to speak, which that's going to leave a pretty big hole, at least for the immediate future.
And he's like the news editor.
He is. City editor, I think, is the term that they use over there. But he essentially handles the local news desk for the local Alt Weekly.
Right. He writes the article. He writes like the news articles as opposed to the entertainment articles.
Yes.
And he's been there a year or two.
He's been 4 years now.
Wow, that's a lot longer than I thought. Let me tell you why I'm going to miss Scott Zobeck, and then you can tell me why you're going to miss Scott Zobeck, and then we'll bring it out to a larger conversation about journalism in the city of Worcester. The thing that I think Zobeck brought two things to the table. One is that he actually seemed to care about city politics, and it's unimportant to me whether or not a journalist cares about city politics. It's important that they seem to care, and that they put that kind of effort in there. And I would say, for example, I don't know, just him, you know, all of his detailed notes and all of his whatevers that he's been willing to share with the world is pretty good. And Worcester Magazine, you know, having this wonderful ability to write, like, every week, you know, 20 short items about little things happening in the city, a sentence or two. Often if a sentence or two is really all that they need.
Right.
This is something that the Telegram and Gazette still has never, they don't have sort of like a Larry King style, like, non sequitur sentence thing about city politics, which is probably what Worcester politics kind of needs. The other thing, of course, is that Scott Zobeck is like probably still the only journalist in Worcester who uses the web in a really comfortable, helpful way. I think, again, like the City Council live blog, you know, posting like the blow by blow of how the meeting's going. The first thing he ever, you know, just taking a WordPress blog, sort of realizing that the Worcester Magazine website was irrevocably screwed up. But screwed up with no will for them to fix it, and him just creating a WordPress blog for what he needed to do to be able to put out, you know, articles throughout the week. Oftentimes, you know, getting stuff up there before the Telegram and Gazette would get stuff up there on their website. I think for the elections, you know, it's very interesting. He would sort of be doing poll watching and posting about little incidents, and other poll watchers would be posting comments or whatever up there. I think that was a valuable, I mean, no major news broke out of the poll watching stuff, but it was, I think, a valuable thing to have people out there just sort of recording for posterity or whatever sake what was going on at the polls that day.
Right.
Those two things. I mean, I would contrast him with, like, Noah Schaefer, his predecessor, who to me was like the guy who was able to break news in Worcester Magazine and, like, scoop the Telegram and Gazette in Worcester Magazine, which is an amazing thing, you know, weekly with a day or two lead time.
Noah continues to do that over at Lawyers Weekly, you know, which is even more amazing that you can be writing for a lawyer's journal and still manage to break news. They've had a really good run at Worcester Magazine when it comes to their news desk, from Noah Schaefer, Chris Kantarakis, Scott Zobeck. It's been a solid decade now of really, really talented people that, like you said, they care about Worcester politics, but I think even more important, on a certain level, they care about the city. You know, we always joke about how, you know, when people complain about our obvious biases and whatnot, I mean, these are guys that I think also, you know, had their biases, and they kept them pretty close, you know, and didn't necessarily let them spill into their writing, but it wasn't a secret to anyone that, you know, the things that they were biased about were, you know, an actual love for the city, an actual love for writing, tying those two things together, and the product was meaningful. I mean, it's easy to criticize, you know, journalism and media here in the city. There's no doubt we're second or third tier media market, but we've had a really good run of people doing, I think, exactly what you should be doing in an alt-weekly, providing a solid amount of information. Like you said, that doesn't become a drag to read. You know, it's whether it's just one sentence or, you know, a full story, it kind of hits a home run every time in the sense that it's meaningful and it's coming from somebody who actually cares about what they're doing.
Yeah. So I wanted to sort of expand this out from a discussion of Scott Zoback, who's, you know, again, like something of a friend or acquaintance to us and has been on this show a number of times. Very nicely, to sort of more general discussion of journalism, and actually I think I'm going to blind the camera if I keep shooting at that angle. So last week I was like going on and on about this thing about journalism, and I just sort of want to cut to the chase because we didn't get to the chase last week. But there's sort of two takeaways from Clay Shirky's latest ruminations on the collapsing or declining American newspapers. One is that he thinks that every city of a certain size, below a certain size, is not really going to have real coverage of City Hall. It's not going to have real advocacy, or not advocacy, but sort of oversight journalism, meaning that there's going to be this period of endemic corruption at the local level or the county level in the United States for a while until people hopefully figure out how to deal with that. The other argument is that, and this comes from a number which I haven't been able to exactly figure out where the author came up with this estimate that something like 85% of the oversight journalism in America is done by newspapers, that, you know, radio stations and free weeklies like the Worcester Magazine and whatever are not doing very much at all of sort of following City Hall, following the schools, you know, making sure that, you know, corruption stuff is not happening, you know, checking people's financial records and whatnot. And Shirky's take on this is that this is like a huge percentage of an important thing that journalism is doing, which has been left to one class of institution, which is now in decline, and that rather than trying to figure out how can you make something that will do that 85%, that really he thinks you should be figuring out how can you come up with 17 things that could do 5%, or maybe you should just figure out how do you do one 5% thing and let out 16 other people figure out how to do the other ones, because nobody's probably smart enough to figure all of these out. Leading me to wonder, is there any hope that, for example, the bloggers of Worcester could do 5% of the oversight journalism in Worcester? I haven't been able to figure out how this guy came up with his 85% number. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I would be counting, you know, like articles in the Telegram and Gazette, right, and say, now we know what's 100% according to some journalism professor.
Yeah, I don't know how you would come up with that number either, or, you know, or track it responsibly, but.
You could just come up with it as like a guess.
Right.
There's a, you know, I just saw there's these guys founding a nonprofit journalism project in the Bay Area, mm-hmm. and I think that they're hiring 10, maybe I don't even remember now, 20 some reporters possibly, and they're spending something like $20 million a year is their guess on this.
Really.
Which seems a little high. Something like $500,000 a year per
cost
reporter?
Of living is higher in the Bay Area.
It may be. Also, I may be totally remembering this number wrong. But anyway, so there are these numbers out there, though, where people are like, this is actually, now we know publicly how much it would cost to run a small internet-focused.
Well, it's interesting, too. I mean, using Worcester as an example, because we do actually have a very prolific group of like writers who are not professional writers. They just do it for fun. And it is interesting to think what, with just a little bit of focus, you know, could come of that. You know, it probably would just take one seminar from an actual journalist in the city on how to make a records request could actually change the direction of non-professional writing in the city in a meaningful way. You know, there's no way that the Telegram or Worcester Magazine have the time or the budgets to be chasing down every little detail in Worcester politics or municipal life while they're still, you know, well-funded and whatnot. As they continue to slowly decline, assuming that that's the direction the papers are going, it seems as though there is a widening window of opportunity for non-professional journalists to actually step in and start doing some of that reporting that maybe it's trivial stuff. You know, maybe it is like people like Tracy Novick covering, you know, school committee meetings that most people don't really care about. But there are details in every one of those blog posts that actually are very meaningful to the city as a whole and over time do build up a pretty important sort of a historical record of what's taking place within municipal government. And it would just seem like it would take a little bit more direction from folks who do know what they're doing, hand that information over to people who don't necessarily have a firm grip on journalism as an art and could do something meaningful with it.
I also think it's not like the Telegram and Gazette has to like find out that some politician is corrupt every week, right? It's more like because the reporters are out there, I think a certain level of corruption is discouraged.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's kind of, and that's, and I, and so that's probably part of it too.
Well, and there's no harm, you know, if our system is set up to actually work and function in a specific way, there's no harm if there's a records request, say, being filed every day from a different part of the city regarding the most trivial aspects of municipal life, right? I mean, mm-hmm. just the simplest, you know, email exchanges or communications within offices and whatnot, there is no harm in that stuff becoming public and somebody actually covering what's there. That's just healthy to the community, and that is what kind of, what in the long term keeps corruption in check. You don't usually, when you think of corruption or you see corruption, it's not because you have evil, you know, schemers behind the scene who are trying to come up with horrible ways to screw us all over. Mm-hmm. It happens because, you know, a window is left open, a door is left open, and people take advantage of that door to try and, you know, fulfill their agendas. But it's not usually bad people, you know, out to get everybody. But you can continue to keep that in check the more light you're shining into those dark corners of municipal government.
Yeah. One thing we've talked about on this show and encouraged Worcester Magazine to do, and now that Scott has moved on, I don't know if this is going to happen. I would be surprised if it does, but would be to do something that the New York Times has done, which is to come up with a sort of formalized internet assignment desk or assignment list. And, you know, the New York Times, for example, will put up on their website, I think they're doing this in some neighborhoods in Brooklyn, that they'll say, you know, there's a meeting of such and such public works committee in Greenpoint on such and such a day, you know, like just on the list. It's like a list of like dozens of these things. And somebody goes to that thing and then they write up their blog post about it and they send it into the Times. And there's different ways that you could handle that. But I sort of think, I mean, when you say, you know, it would be nice to have a journalist do a lecture about this or about mm-hmm. that or about how to do a records request, I think it would also be interesting to see, you know, what if somebody like a in-city, probably not the in-city Times, but what if somebody like a Worcester Magazine or a whatever other publication was to say, here's like stuff that we need to know about the election.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily need to even fit into their current mode of thinking. You know, it was something else we've talked about in the past is, you know, if you go back 10, 15 years and look at the Telegram, for example, there were more desks in that, you know, they had a local tennis reporter, right? I mean, they had reporters to cover everything. As money got tight, they had to consolidate a lot of those offices, right. Let people go. But one thing that has also changed in terms of their, it seems has changed in terms of the mindset of journalism in general, is not creating new desks as they become appropriate. So we have this constantly shrinking pool of reporters who remain very focused on what they're doing, and that only means that there are other things that are coming up just because society changes that are not getting covered.
So they're recorded. It's a set of desks, which is a subset of what was appropriate 20 years ago,
exactly.
Rather than a subset of what's appropriate today.
Someone sent me a link yesterday. I think it's in Denver. The paper of record out there is actually looking to hire a reviewer of marijuana dispensaries.
Okay.
Because over the last year, they've had 70 legal marijuana dispensaries open up in the Denver area. They want to start reviewing them as they're doing restaurant reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And it dawned on me that, like, you know, that's a perfect example of how journalism should work. You know, they've got something that is now a new part of society, a new and legal part of society. We need someone who's covering this. So they're creating a brand new position and hiring for it.
Speaking of which, by the way, we found two dime bags out here today. Also, that's a nice basketball one, not a Jack O'Lantern one, unfortunately. It's been about that way the last few weeks. We haven't really mentioned the number of.
But that, I think, is something that journalists, hosts of journalism, you know, newspapers, TV stations, whatever they are, really need to be focused on, is that society changes so quickly now. On a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, on a quarterly basis, you're always going to have new solid topics that need to be covered. And if you don't, you know, assign somebody to those topics, it's just going to go by the wayside. It's just going to be another hole in civic life that isn't reported upon.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, that seems to be the biggest danger now, is that we do know that we're changing constantly as a society, and there are so many new aspects of life that are just not being covered by journalism or journalists because they are focused on their sort of classical, you know, points of interest, whether it be, you know, the local political reporters, or, you know, the corruption guys or the investigative guys. There's still all this other stuff that needs to be covered that's very important to somebody, and it's falling by the wayside. And that is a place, I think, where, you know, non-professional journalists could actually start playing a bigger role.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you on an almost related note about the perception that I've seen some people complain online that there's not been a lot of candidate forums, that they don't know much about the candidates this year, and the candidates have come back on, I think we may have brought this up on this show, and they say, no, we're doing lots of forums. We've been relatively successful, actually, in getting challengers to be on this show. If you're a challenger in a school committee or city council in the next upcoming election, or you're working with the campaign, email pieandcoffee@gmail.com, and we'll get you on in October before the election. And you are actually going to be moderating some debates and things coming up. I wanted to ask though about that, the perception of that, you know, people are sort of opting out a little bit from sort of public, not public events, but sort of public debate type events this year.
I can't really put a finger on what the root cause of what appears to be a lack of interest is, but Monday night, or Tuesday night, I think it was, went to the League of Women Voters, had their school committee forum.
Okay.
There was 20 people in the crowd, if that, and half of those people all had notebooks in their hands, so I'm assuming they were some sort of writer or journalist.
Mm-hmm.
There was an obvious lack of interest from the general public when it came to that forum, which isn't always the most exciting forum. You don't have chairs being thrown and whatnot, but it is, you know, a good way to get introduced to the candidates for school committee, and there was nobody there. Mm-hmm. If there's nobody coming to those forums, I can only imagine that the candidates themselves then have to take a step back and wonder, does it actually make sense for me to be doing these forums? Does it make sense for me to be getting involved and risk putting myself out there, saying something unnecessary when the only people who are going to hear this are the journalists who are sitting in the crowd?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit of a double-edged sword. I'm sure the candidates themselves would, to a certain degree, some of them, like to actually have more exposure and more access to the community. But if the community isn't really interested, and the journalists are the only ones who are interested, the newspapers, TV stations, what have you, then the risk of themselves being put out in the spotlight probably is higher than necessary. So I still can't figure out what it is about the average Worcesterite that keeps them from getting involved. You know, you would think there would be a certain point, a tipping point, so to speak, where the lack of interest would then generate new interest, right? Like you'd think that the general public would just get so frustrated with the things that go on because nobody's actually paying attention, that would be the motivation to start paying attention.
Yeah.
But either we haven't hit that point, or I'm completely mistaken, and there just is a certain pervasive cynicism and apathy that keeps people from getting involved in at least eyeballing, you know, these candidates and what they're doing.
We need to raise city council salaries so we'll have a better class of candidates. That was said ironically. I wanted to, in our final remaining minutes here, I wanted to talk about, actually, let's talk about marijuana some more, but let's talk about a couple of sort of things that are going on in the city first. I'm trying to remember what happened since the last show. Saw some nice Shakespeare this week at Clark, yep. As You Like It. Very good performance. Very,
excellent.
very nicely done. Very professional. Something was probably going on over the weekend. Oh, went apple picking over the weekend. Biked out to Sterling. Got some apples and pumpkins. That was very nice. Very nice fall thing to do. Man, I'm trying to think of what else is going on. This weekend I'm going to D.C., so I'm not going to be around to...
Yeah, it's been a pretty slow week for me. I don't know that there's been a whole heck of a lot going on.
We had a burst of festivals there.
It's that one two-week period that I think all of our festivals, fall festivals, take place in. And after that, you get to head out to like Wachusett or the small surrounding towns to see anything meaningful taking place.
At this point, we're waiting for Halloween to show up.
Just waiting for Halloween.
So what is this? So there's some kind of a thing with medical marijuana in Massachusetts.
We actually have a medical marijuana bill in the House right now. I'm going to say it's 2180. I've been trying to remember that number, but terrible with numbers. I think it's the House Bill 2180 is the medical marijuana bill, which would essentially set up a framework for, it wouldn't set up distribution, as far as I can tell. So this is, I think, going to be the downside to the way this bill was written. It will allow for people who are chronically ill to be prescribed marijuana as a treatment by their doctors under physician supervision. And I can't find anything in the bill, though, that would set up an actual framework for distribution centers, like dispensaries and whatnot, which that oftentimes becomes the...
So you could get a prescription, and then you could fly to California?
See, that becomes the problem. And, you know, I think if you and I sat down, we would then figure out, like, okay, well, then we just need to write another bill and create a distribution system for legal, you know, and safe marijuana. But that oftentimes also becomes the sticking point for legislators when they decide, you know, can we actually do this? Because we don't want to get ourselves into a situation where we've now created the demand, but there's no safe supply.
And right.
It's a chicken and egg sort of game. But the interesting thing about this bill is Suffolk University recently did a poll of Massachusetts voters. It was 500 voters, I believe, and 81% of them were actually in support of that ideology in the way that it's written in the bill, which is just an astounding number of people. You know, they had equal number of registered Republicans and unenrolled voters alongside registered Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And both sides, you know, regardless of voting bloc, the support was near unanimous.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see if the state legislature actually picks up on that public sentiment and moves forward with the bill in a constructive way.
It's often pointed out that marijuana is one of the handfuls of issues where the legislatures are basically way out of sync with public opinion and remain that way.
I've never encountered a situation where you, speaking to an elected official, they don't share almost my exact sentiments on, you know, making marijuana freely available, not freely available, but available to the public. But then they kind of the secondary mindset is, but I could never actually vote on it because my constituents will kill me.
Right. Or there's a hardcore of people who are totally your Billy Bros, who are totally freaked out by this idea, and the people who are in support of it are not totally whatever the opposite of being. Whatever being freaked out in a good way is, they're not totally enthusiastic about it.
Right.
So it's a hardcore of naysayers, and everybody else is like vaguely, oh yeah, go for it.
And although I don't agree with it, I can respect that. You know, I mean, you've got people who do need to be concerned. You know, they want to make sure that this is a good example of elected officials wanting to be sure, absolutely sure, that their opinion actually does match up with their constituents, which is what they're there for. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're supposed to be reflecting the views of their constituents. But if we're seeing, you know, numbers like 81% now, then the hope would be that the state legislature actually does realize that now is probably the time to move forward on something mm-hmm. like that, even if just to test the waters. I mean, I think that's kind of what we got with question two last year, starting to lower the penalties of turning possession of under an ounce of marijuana into a civil offense. It's been almost
unless you do it on like federal land, apparently.
Right. I mean, we can't start adjusting federal law on the state level, but in the near year since that question passed, the wheels haven't fallen off the bus. Not much has changed. The same number of dime bags seem to be on the ground here. You know, very little has actually changed in our society, mm-hmm. which should be a good indication that the folks who are just adamantly opposed to marijuana in any way, shape, or form are probably on the wrong side of the issue at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Sooner or later, the Billy Bros are going to have to just recognize that this is not the problem. You know, that the mere existence of marijuana as an issue is not the thing that's going to make or break our civilization.
Right.
And, you know, hopefully something happens with the medical marijuana issue. There's no shortage now of professional organizations within the medical community that are coming out to support these bills that are mm-hmm. popping up nationally. And it seems as though the legislatures on pretty much any state that has dealt with this issue are now starting to actually acknowledge the general mindset of the population.
So is this something that legislators are actually going to get a chance to vote on? Do you know where it is?
It's stuck in committee right now, and
okay.
I don't know which committee it is. We've got no shortage of committees. But it's like most bills hung up in committee. It's going to be a matter of the gatekeepers in that particular committee allowing it to proceed out for a vote.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, with question two, it was our vote. Now this is going to be up to the state legislature to determine the future of the bill. So it'll be interesting to see if their ideology seems to match up with ours.
We'll see what happens. Well, unless you have a final message for the people of Worcester.
I don't think I have a final message today.
All right, so my final message will just be, again, if you want to see us out here in the rain, in the snow, we're willing to do it. We're just looking for a little bit. We're just looking to keep the level of feedback steady or increase it. We're looking for 10 pieces of feedback this week. You could even do one of those YouTube response videos. Those are awesome. All right, well, we'll see everybody next week. Farewell, Worcester.
Have a good one.